Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Kuf Lamed Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur opens with the bottom line of Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel Amid Beis. Before we begin the shiur, let us take note of the introductory note that we have to our sugya. In our Shas Ozer, which is the Shas you see on your screen, the cornerstone of Gemara markings, we offer topic headings and structural notes entitled Mivneh in the outside margin when appropriate. In this case, you'll notice the final comment on Kuf Lamed Gimel Amid Beis reads as follows under the title Nosei, Liyashev Stira, to resolve a seeming contradiction, B'mikre Shekoyin Mochar Behema Chutz Min HaMatonos, in the event that a Kohen sells an animal, with the exception of the Matonos, the Zra L'chayev Bekeva, Haim Kohen HaMocher Mekabel Oysam Matonos. Is it so that the Kohen will receive those matonos? So our Gemara quotes the Mishnah, the imamar loy chutz mina matonos, if the Kohen who is selling a behemoth to a Yisrael said to him, I'm selling you this animal with the exception of the matonos, potur min hamatonos. So the Yisrael will not be obligated to give those matonos, to separate the matonos and give them to another Kohen. This is because in saying chutz min hamatonos, the Kohen in effect didn't sell the matonos to the purchaser. The Gemara asks at the top of Kuf Lamed Dalid Omed Aleph a stira, a seeming contradiction. V'raminhu, we have a Tanaic source. As you can see, it appears in a frame, as do all Tanaic sources in our Gemara markings. Almenas shamatonos shili. A Kohen is selling a behemoth to Yisrael, and he says, on condition that the matonos will be mine. No saying l'chol Kohen shiyirtze. The Yisrael who bought the animal is expected to give the matonos to whichever Kohen he likes. But what we see here is that there is an obligation to give, to separate and give away the matonos. The Rashi at the top says, "V'raminu Kohen shemochar behemoth Yisrael v'yomar lo almenas shamatonos shali." A Kohen who sold an animal to a Yisrael and said, "On condition that the matonos will be mine." No stone Yisrael l'chol Kohen shiyirtze. The Yisrael will give it to any Kohen that he wants. To keep on the kulu behemoth zovin lei, since the entire behemoth was sold to him. Lo motzi lasnuei lei hai amatonos. The seller, Kohen, cannot make a condition regarding the matonos because they're not his. He sold the entire behemoth to the Israel. Ella shel kohanim ninu. Rather, the matonos belong to the klal, to the collective kohuna. V'ein lo bohen ella tovas hano. The owner has tovas hano, means he has the ability to decide to whom to give it. The main thing we see from here is that he is obligated in giving the matonos. This stands in contrast, or in almost contradiction, to the Mishnah that said potur, that he is exempt from giving the matonos. The Gemara answers, the phrase in this Tanaic source is different than the phrase in the Mishnah. In this source, the condition was made, phrasing it, almenas shamatonos shali, meaning almenas, on condition that. In other words, I'm selling you the entire behemoth on condition that. And the Mishnah used the expression chutz min hamatonos, meaning I'm selling you the behemoth, but not the entire behemoth. I'm selling you almost all of the behema, with the exception of the matana. So on condition versus exception are two, they're two different expressions. And the Gemara points this out. Almenas achutz koromis. Are you koromis means you are you trying to raise a contradiction between these two different expressions? Chutz shiura. The expression chutz indicates something that is left out. In other words, the sale was incomplete. The matanas were never part of the sale. Therefore, the purchaser is not obligated, is potter. Rashi points out, in that case, the matanas are retained by the Kohen that sold the behema. That's as far as the chutz expression. Almenas, however, the Gemara says, lav shira. Almenas is not a case of keeping something. The Rashi says, almenas lav shirahu el tano. It's a tanai, a condition. Hakol moharlo. I'm selling you the entire behema. Almenas shiitnam lo. Vehu ein bo koach lahasnos. And the key point here is that the Kohen who's selling it doesn't have the power to make such a tanai. Therefore, it has no bearing, and therefore the Kohen, the Yisrael who purchased the behemah from the Kohen, will be obligated to give the matanas, but to whomever he wants. The Gemara asks, but nevertheless, there is a question. V'raminu, I still will raise a contradiction from another source, in which you see the almanas expression used just like the top source, with a different result. It says, almanas shamatona shali, the Kohen is selling an animal to a Yisrael, and he says, on condition that the matonas shall be mine, hamatona shalo. The Kohen does retain the matonas. And you'll notice how we've dashed underline Hamatana Shalo to point out that this is the point of difference. So the Gemara answers, Beha Pligi. It now is on this point that there is a controversy. Namely, Mar Savar Amanas equals Shira. That the expression Amanas indicates something that is left out. In other words, the original sale was not a complete sale, and Umor Sofar, the other source holds Almanas Lav Shiurahu. That would be the top source. The top source indicates that Almanas is not something that is left out, that it was a complete sale, and therefore the Kohen seller could not retain anything. Omar Loi Mechor li b'nei me'aha. So the Mishnah went on to say here that lokhon heimenu b'mishkal nosnon l'kohen u'menake loy min hadomim. If the purchase took place by weight, in other words, a per pound per pound price was assigned, so the purchaser will give the matonas to a Kohen, and he can expect a reduction in price from the seller, because the seller in this case was clearly getting money for the matonas, and he had no right to sell the matonas, he had no right to take money for the matonas. This is something that is a gift to the kahuna. And therefore, if the seller was paid money, it was wrongful, and therefore a refund or a reduction must be made. Omar Rav, loy shonu elo sheshokal li'atzmoy. Let's glance at the Rashi to understand what Rav is qualifying. He says that, Rashi says, lo shonu hecho deloka chemenu b'mishkal dekotoni. The case of the organs being sold by weight, which includes the keva, which is one of the matnas kahuna. It said in the Mishnah, noisnon lokeach l'kohen, the buyer gives the keva to the kohen, v'hu chozer v'tavei adomim min ha-tabach, and he, the buyer, goes back to the butcher to get his refund. That procedure was taught, Rav says, elo shishokal li'atzmo, it says in the Gemara. Now Rashi says on this, elo kishishoklon lokeach li'atzmo, where the purchaser was in a, we'll call it a self-service shop, where he took the organs himself and weighed them. The kevon de tabach lo noga bohen, since the butcher didn't touch them, eino bal dvorim shokohen. He therefore is not a party to this with regard to the kohen. The tabach is not a party, it's not a litigant. Lefikoch ze halokeach nosnan, therefore the one who purchased it, he gives the organ, the kevah in this case, to the kohen. V'hu shoel lo hadomim shal hatabach hoya mutal litein, and he, the purchaser, shall ask for his money, which was wrongfully collected by the tabach. It was really the tabach's obligation to give the matonis. So Rav says that the din of the Mishnah, that the Kohen has his dealings with the purchaser, is seemingly indicating that the tabach is not an address for the Kohen. This is a function of the purchaser having done the weighing, we'll call it the wrongful act, because the organs, particularly the keva, should not have been part of the sale. The Gemara goes on, Aval shokal lo tabach, if the butcher weighed out, he took the organs, weighed them, put them on the scale, and conducted the non-self-service fashion, then hadin im hatabach. Rashi points out this phrase means that the din, the legal issue, can be taken up even with the tabach. This is not a comment of exclusivity, but rather inclusive. Not only is the lokeach someone the kohen may deal with, but lokeach meaning the purchaser, but the seller, the tabach himself, is someone the kohen can address. Let's take a look at the Rashi for this. Avol shoklon lo itaboch hadin shel kohen umach lukosoi, and his argument utviyoso, and his claim af im hatabochu, it's even with the taboch. Vataboch choser alehem im yeshnon be'en, and the taboch is expected to seek out the organ, the keva, if they're still around. Nosnon, he seeks them out. Im yeshnon be'en nosnon lakohen, and if they are around, he gives it to the kohen. V'hochi meforish lo b'reisha gozel b'bavakama. The Gemara in Bavakama explains the af im hatabach kom Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that the din is even with the tabach. The Gemara goes on. Rav Asi Omar afilu shokalo tabach. Even if the tabach weighed out the organs, hadin imo, the kohen's claim is against the purchaser. And the reason for that, Rashi says, is because the item that was stolen, so to speak, the wrongfully taken item, the keva, is in his domain, it is in his rishus. So according to Rav Asi, You go to your address, your claim is laid against the location where the stolen item is. And in this case, it's by the lokeach. So we have a machlokis here, Rav and Rav Asi, concerning a case where the tabach is the one that did the wrongful act of conducting the sale of the keva. And Rav says that even though the tabach was the sale, it doesn't exclude the lokeach from being the claimant. the one claimed from, and Ravasi says it does. That if the Taboch, even if the Taboch did the conducted the sale, the Lokeach is the exclusive address. The Gemara asks a question here. It lasts a few lines. You'll see it's a five-line question. What is the underlying point of Machlokis? That's what interests the Gemara right now. Before we go on, we should have pointed out earlier, but it's never too late. We have a topic heading that introduces this Gemara in the outside margin. Machlokis Rav Asi, Rav v'Rav Asi, Hecha d'shoka lo hataboch. The machlokis between these two opinions, in a case where the butcher weighed out the organs, imakoin yochol lidboya af hataboch, can the kohen lay his claim at on the taboch himself? O gam b'mikre zeh, or is it so that even in this case hadin im halokeach hoil v'hamatonos be'en, that the Kohen's claim is against only the Lokeach, since the Matonos are still extant? So the Gemara now, going back to the Gemara, Lema b'derav chisto komiflugi. Can we say, or should we say, that the Machlokis Rav and Rav Asi concerns Rav Chisto's principle? The Omar Rav Chisto, Gozal v'lo nisyashua baylim, a theft that took place, and the original owner has not given up hope, Ubo acher v'ochlo, and someone else comes and consumes the stolen item, Rotsa mizeh goyve, Rotsa mizeh goyve. The victim, the one from whom the item was stolen, has the option, according to Rav Chisda, of going to the thief or going to the one that consumed the item. So that's Rav Chisda's point. Demor is lay to Rav Chisda. Rav would subscribe to Rav Chisda because Rav indicates the din was even with the taboch, indicating that the Kohen could go to the purchaser or to the original source. In this case, we're talking about the taboch that weighed it out, where the taboch would represent the position of the thief. So just like Rav Chisda said, Rotso mizeh gove, Rotso mizeh gove, Rav said that the din is even with the taboch, indicating that it's also could be with the lokeach. Or more, that would be Rav Asi, less lay the Rav Chisda. Rav Asi does not hold from Rav Chisda. Therefore, the Kohen goes only to the lokeach. The Gemara says that we're not going to parallel Rav and Rav Asi set up Rav and Rav Asi as arguing concerning this Rav Chisda principle. Lo, de kule alma is lehu de Rav Chisda. Everyone will subscribe to Rav Chisda. Let's take a look at Rashi. Lo, the gazlon the alma, Rashi says, shagazlon kenesu begezeloso l'shalem. In a general case of theft, where there's a principle that the gazlan is said to acquire the item, the idea of acquisition, when we speak about a gazlan, it means he acquires it with an obligation. He acquires essentially the obligation. He's obligated to pay. So in a case of gzeilo bi'alma, Rashi goes on, to kule alma islehu de Rav Chisda. Everyone subscribes to Rav Chisda. Dim rotza nigzal lodun im horishon idon. That if the nigzal, the victim, wants to deal with the original thief, he can. The thief is still in the picture, even though someone else took it from him. However, here, Rashi goes on, the hocha begozal matanus kahuno kumifligi. It's only in this case where the item that was stolen isn't a standard possession of somebody, but rather it's the matnas kahuna that were stolen. This is where the machlokis arises. So before going on in the Rashi, let us look in the Gemara. V'hocha b'matonos kahuna nigzolos komifuli. Does the concept of gezel, concept of theft, apply to matnas kahuna? The mor savar nigzolos. Rav holds they are something that lend themselves to being stolen. Umor savar ein nigzolos. And the other dea holds that they are not something that lend themselves to be stolen. Now, what do we mean by that? So let's once again look in the Rashi. You'll notice that we have little diamonds in the Rashi. The more savar, matnas kahuna nigzolos, v'nischayev, gazlon v'gzeilosoy, l'shalem, that would be, if you hold nigzolos, the gazlon, in this case the tabuch, is bound, is duty bound to compensate. The Torah's gezel alehen. And being that that's the case, since they lend themselves to being stolen, the tabuch, who did the weighing, is considered the thief and is hence an address for the kohen. He is to be, this kohen can seek out compensation from him. Umor Sofar Rashi goes on, Einom Nigzalos, Ein Koach LeGazlon. The gazlon doesn't have the ability to accomplish a, we'll call, a theft in legal terms. He physically took them, but it's not considered a theft. The Cholzman Shehin Be'ein, where when they are still around, they are extant. Kol Mokom Shaholchin, wherever they end up, hachov mutal al mi shame etzlo. The obligation is upon whom the matanos are found by, him. So, reading that again, hachov mutal mi shame etzlo l'sita l'koin. It's his obligation. So that where you have a tabuch that weighed out the organs sold them to a purchaser, and the organs are by the purchaser, it is the purchaser's obligation to see to it that the kohen gets it. The first one, the tabuch, is not considered a thief in the sense that, as we said, in general a thief does absorb or acquire the obligation to compensate. In this case, since it's an item that's eino nigzolos, according to this opinion, and that's the opinion of Rav Asi, so the tabuch is not an address. You go to where the item is, and that happens, in this case, it happens to be by the lokeach. And once again, this machlokas Rav and Rav Asi is limited to the case of matnas kahuna. Iko, the Gemara goes on, Iko demasni lo lahosh maitza bifnei atzma. This is a second version of presenting this machlokas. It's not, there isn't a legal difference, but as far as the structure of things, Rav and Ravasi in this lashon are not a comment on the Mishnah. They don't open up with the expression lo shonu, which indicates that they were commenting on a source, but rather Rav Omar Matnas Kuna Nigzolos, Rav Asi Omar Matnas Kuna Ein Nigzolos. Here it's presented as an isolated comment or isolated ruling, not as a commentary on the Mishnah. But it's basically the same result as we saw above. The Mishnah. Ger Shinis Gayer Vahoisa Loi Poro. A person converted to Judaism, and he happened to have a cow. And we're talking about a cow that is slaughtered. When was it slaughtered? So that is the point of the Mishnah. Nishchato ad shelo nizgayer poter. If it was slaughtered before the conversion, so there is no obligation to give the matonis, because what you're dealing with is a cow that was slaughtered by a non-Jewish owner, and a non-Jew is not obligated in this mitzvah of matonis. Mishin is gayer chayav. If the slaughtering took place after the conversion, so a converted Jew is a full-fledged Jew with Torah obligations, and hence he's obligated to tithe and give away the matonis. Safek, if it's in doubt. In other words, we don't know when the slaughtering took place. Did it take place prior to the conversion or after the conversion? Potter. So the owner is exempt. Shamotzi mechavero l'voraya. There's a very well-known principle in laws regarding money, that the one who wants to collect, the motzi, the one who is taking away, he has to bring the proof. He has to prove when the animal was slaughtered. And in the absence of his ability to prove that the animal was slaughtered after the conversion, so he, in this case, the Kohanim, the Kohen, cannot demand payment or to demand the matonis. Before going on in the Gemara, we have some structural notes to deal with. We see in our Gemara a diamond that appears around Rav Dimi, and we have an indication that he is number one. We also will see a number two at the top of Omid Beis, second line from the top, around Ravin. The Rav Dimi and Ravin are raising contradictions that are relevant to our sugya. So, but they're two different versions of the stira. Hence, we have them noted as one and two. In addition, we will see triangles, which are explained on the side of our Gemara as well. You can see the triangle is featured, and it says ma'akav. A ma'akav is an attempt to keep track. The triangle with the point facing up, kushios, questions. What we're referring to is a stira, be'inyan safek matonis. When you have a doubt regarding the matonis or tithes, when there's a matter of doubt, so with the do we go lekula or lechumra? Stira will be between two sources. We saw already our Mishnah that indicated lekula. When from the standpoint of the owner, we are lenient. We don't obligate him, and we will see another source that seems to say that he is obligated. And then with the triangle point facing down, that represents answers or responses. They're called tshuvos. So now the Gemara. Ki osa Rav Dimi Omar. When Rav Dimi came, Rav Dimi was a traveler who traveled between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael. So when he came to Bavel, he told us, Rami lei Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish le Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Shimon Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan were two great scholars that lived in Eretz Yisrael. So Rav Dimi reports that Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, better known as Reish Lakish, raised a stira, contradiction, to Rabbi Yochanan. In other words, in the presence of Rabbi Yochanan. Tanan, on the one hand, we had in our Mishnah, it said, Safek Potter. Almost sveka lekula. From this you would conclude that in a case of doubt, we are lenient and don't obligate the owner to tithe. Verominhu, but we raise a stira. And we put a triangle around here because this is the beginning of the back and forth style of questioning. Here is the question. It is a contradiction. And you'll see that we have a long marking here to indicate the length, the long question marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara. You see the kuf that's encircled with a descending dashed line. Viraminu, chore hanemolim. This source features a field. In a field, naturally, you have ant colonies and holes that ants dig out in the ground, and grains from the field can end up in these holes. In fields, when you're dealing with grains, you have a tithe, a type of tithe that's left for the poor, and that includes grains that happen to fall, and one goes by them in the harvesting and doesn't pick them up. Those are left to the poor. So the source says, "Chorei hanemolim shebesoich hakoma." Besoch hakoma, koma, it means standing grain. So you have ant holes in a field before it has been harvested. And there are grains in these ant holes. Again, we're dealing with this, at this point, with a field before it's been harvested. Harei elu shabalabayas. So grains found in the holes of a field that have not been harvested yet, those belong to the owner. Vishila achar hakotrim. If the field has been harvested. So, it depends. Ho'el yoinim laniyim, the upper level of grains, those would be the ones that are at the rim of the hole, those belong to the aniyim. They are grains that we would suspect fell from at the point of harvesting, and that's called leket. And that which falls during the harvesting, that falls to the floor during harvesting, that is said to belong to the poor. Vatachtonim, those that are in the lower level of the hole, the bottom of the hole, shel balabayas, that would be ascribed to the owner because they got there before the harvest took place. Rabbi Meir Omer, and for our purposes, we want to focus on Rabbi Meir. Our Mishnah has no name in it. It's called a Stam Mishnah, and we say that a Stam Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir is represented by our Mishnah, and here we see Rabbi Meir in the case of the grains, says Rabbi Meir Omer, Hakol Laniyim, everything will go to the poor, even those grains at the bottom of the hole, Shesofik Leket Leket. If you have a doubt, you treat it as if it belongs to the poor. So the point is that here is also a different type of tithe, but it's a tithe all the same, and here the owner is obligated to part with it. The point is, just like by leket, we say owner must part with it, similarly by the matnas kahuna, we will say a suffek lechumra, that in the case of suffek, you go to treat it with stringency as far as the owner is concerned. So that is our contradiction. By the way, you notice we've dashed underlined sofek leket leket to point out that this is the focus of our discussion. Omar le, Rabbi Yochanan responds, it says, al takniteni, don't try to, let's say, challenge me, literally to irritate me or get me angry, but it means don't challenge me from don't raise this as a problem, as a challenge. Shebeloshen yochid ani shoina oisa, the source that you just quoted that said sofek leket leket, I treat it, or I learned it, my tradition is that it's the opinion of an individual, it's not an accepted opinion, and hence it doesn't represent a contradiction. Tisanya, and here you have a source, and you'll see there's a name, Rabbi Yehuda ben Agra Omer Mishum Rabbi Meir. It's not a general consensus as to what Rabbi Meir holds, but it's rather Rabbi Yehuda ben Agra's opinion, or his personal tradition as to what Rabbi Meir said. Sofek leket leket, sofek shikos shikos, sofek peah peah. Leket shikon peah, different types of tithes, without getting into details, that are left from a field. We've dashed underline sofek leket leket because that's the main point, and we want to ascribe that to Rabbi Yehuda ben Agra alone. Omar lo, however, this controversy or this discussion has not ended. You can see the triangle reappears. Reish Lakish comes back and says, al tishana oisela beloshin ben tadal. Rav Shlokesh says, I don't care in whose name you teach this, even if you say this was authored by Ben Tadol. And it's explained that Ben Tadol is the name of a well-known fool. The issue, Rav Shlokesh says, it's not a matter of who authored it. V'ha taima k'omar. There is a basis given for this opinion called Sufek Leket Leket. And it's the basis that we have to deal with. That is a posuk. My hatzdiku. What does hatzdiku in this posuk mean? If you were to think that this posuk, which is addressing judges, and it says, give the benefit to the poor and the impoverished. That can't be the pshat. That can't be the explanation. But the pasuk elsewhere in the Torah says that you shall not benefit the poor in his case, in his argument. You cannot play favorites, picking a side in a controversy just because of the status of one of the litigants. Ella, what does oni v'rosh hatzdiku mean? Tzadek mishelcha v'tein lo. If you have the ability, and you happen to be the judge, and you see that a poor man is losing out, so then pay out of your own pocket. Give to him. If you see that he's losing the case, then so you'll rule against him. However, at the same time, offer him financial assistance and give him from yourself. So, you see from this that when you have an issue of, for example, matnas aniyim, the sofek leket we ruled is leket, that is not because we say sofek lechumra per se, but rather it's because we want you to give of your own. So, being that this is the case, tzadek mishelcha v'tein lo, we still have a problem. So that when you go back to the matnas kahuna, if you have a suffix, we would still expect you to give of it. Omar Rava. Rava offers a response. There is a difference between the case of the Matnas Kahuna, the case of the Pora, which was featured in our Mishnah, and the case of the grains. Hacha Pora b'cheskas p'tura kaima. We're talking about the Pora that was owned by someone that we knew for sure had been a non-Jew. That was a given. We knew that at the beginning point, it was exempt from matonas. Now, when the doubt arises, you have a doubt concerning change of status. With the arising of the doubt, we're talking about the change in a chazoka. Well, in such a case, we say the pora b'cheskas p'tura kaima. Because we have an issue of doubt, to settle a doubt, we rely on original known status. And the original known status was one of exemption. And the doubt doesn't change. The fact that a doubt arose, that's not going to change the known status of exemption. Kama, however, when you're dealing with a field owned by a Jew is someone who is obligated in leket. Becheskas chiyuvo kaimo. And as a result of that, the source said, Safek Leket Leket. So the primary difference is, what chazoka did these two cases feature? In the case of the Pora, there was a Chezkas Ptur, there was a status of exemption. In the case of the field, there was a Chezkas Chiyuv, a status of obligation. Omar Le Abaye. Abaye raises a question, and hence you can see the triangle with the point facing up. Vare Esau, well, the case of dough, and when you deal with dough in halacha, if you need a certain amount, a certain minimum amount, there's a tithe obligation called challah. Now the source says, Nasis Ashelon is Gayer Potter Minachala. If dough was prepared by an individual before he converted, so it's exempt from the Chalotayv. Mishin is Gayer, if dough was prepared by someone who converted and it was prepared after his conversion, he prepared the dough, so it is bound, it is chayav, it's obligated to be tithed. Safek chayav. Now, this we want to focus on. Here you have a case of doubt, safek, even though it was becheskas ptur. It was had a status of exemption, and yet we rule stringently that you're still obligated to give, so that the doubt seems to undo the status. Omar Lay. So the Rova answers Abaye's question and says this is not a problem. If you're asking on the case of challah, from the case of challah on the case of para, there's a fundamental difference. The realm of challah is called a realm of isur. It's beyond the financial value of the dough, the monetary value, which is called mamon. Beyond that, there's also a prohibition, we'll call it a spiritual prohibition, which results in a spiritual type punishment, or in a non-court punishment known as misa bidei shamayim. For someone who should not be eating challah eats it, so he is involved and he becomes subject to a heavenly ordained punishment known as misa bidei shamayim. That type of punishment removes it from the realm of strict finances of mamon and classifies it as isur. There are many other areas of Jewish law that are not mamon related, that are, we'll call them non-financial violations, and hence they fall into a category of isur. Not only, by the way, if it's a death at the hands of heaven, but all kinds of other obligations, like milk and meat, for example, is not a financial violation, but it's a violation of isur. It's we'll call it, for lack of a better term, a religious violation. So when something is of that nature, we tend to rule stringently. Even in a case of doubt, we rule stringently. However, if the case of strict finances, mamon, simple finance, straightforward financial issues, which is the case of matnas kahuna, by that we mean that if someone who doesn't deserve the matnas kahuna ends up eating it, he's beyond the financial violation, there is no other prohibition involved, or no other penalty involved. Hence, that's classified as strict mamon, straightforward financial violation. Now, in the Gemara, so Rava answers, Omar le Safek Isura l'chumra. When you have a doubt concerning this realm, which we call Isur, we rule stringently, which is the case of the challah and the dough. Safek Mamona l'kula. When you have a doubt concerning finances, which is the case of the matanas, we rule leniently. The Omar Rav Chisda, V'chein Toni Rabbi Chia. We have Rav Chisda, and we also have a Tanaic source authored by Rabbi Chia that features differences, a list of items, Shmona Sveikos Nemru Beger. There are 8 cases of doubt that could arise with regard to a ger, a convert. Arba L'chiyuv, Arba L'ftur. 4 of them we will rule stringently, and 4 leniently. Namely, if there is an issue of doubt, we will say he is exempt. The 4 that we, if there a doubt arises that we rule stringently, they are Korban Ishto, V'chala, U'b'chor Behema Tamea, U'b'chor Behema Torah. L'chiyuv. If there's a doubt, we will say that these must be done. The Korban Ishto is a sacrifice brought when a woman gives birth. And if you have a case, if we don't know if she gave birth while she was still a Gentile or she gave birth after she converted, the Korban must be brought. because if she doesn't bring the korban and ends up eating sacrifices without having brought this korban, she is chayav kores, so that you can see kores being a heavenly ordained punishment, not within the realm of finances. So we rule stringently. Chala we discussed already. Bechor behema tamea is the obligation of tithing or of giving a firstborn donkey to a kohen. That's called the Petr Chamor. The animal, the firstborn donkey, is forbidden to benefit from. It's called Iser Hano until it's redeemed. So if you have any doubt concerning the firstborn donkey, we rule that you have to redeem it to remove the Isur Hano, the prohibition of benefiting. Once again, it's a non-financial issue, so we rule stringently. Bechor Behema Tahora, a firstborn kosher variety animal, is an animal that must be brought by a Kohen as a sacrifice. So again, it's not a financial issue, and therefore, if there's a doubt as to when the animal was born, you must rule stringently and say it's chayav. Another four examples of doubt result in exemption. That's reishis hagez, v'amatonos, upidyon haben, upidyon peter chamor. Rashi explains at the top, reishis hagez, kol hanach kulu lo ramyo isur olayu. There isn't an element of isur on these things. Elo mamona, they are financial issues. Hilkoch sveikon lekula. Therefore, we rule with leniency with regard to doubts concerning them. The reishis hagez is the shearings, the beginning of the shearings, which is the topic of the next perek. Matonos is our topic of Zeruah Chaim V'Keva. Pidyon HaBen is the five pieces of silver that one is obligated to pay to a Kohen when a person has a firstborn male son. And Pidyon Peter Chamor is a reference to the sheep that is used in redeeming the firstborn donkey, so that if there is a doubt concerning the conversion of a person, did it take place before or after, so we will tell the convert to separate the sheep, but you may keep it for yourself. You don't have to give that sheep to the Kohen, because the sheep itself does not involve Esor. It's simply a matter of ownership. And if you have a doubt concerning this matter, he is not obligated to give it away. Ki asa Ravin, the Gemara continues, Omar, Ravin, as opposed to Ravdimi, says, Koma akoma rami lei. What was the stira that Reish Lakish raised to Rabbi Yochanan in the presence of Rabbi Yochanan? An issue concerning the two different sources regarding the grains in the field that ended up in the ant holes. One source indicated Sofek Leket is Leket, and the other source indicated otherwise. If we take a look in the Rashi, Koma koma romile, masnisa achriti ashkach, l'rabbi meir de potar, b'koma shogir, sofek nixra kodim shiniz gayer, sofek mishiniz gayer. There was another Tanaic source in which Rabbi Meir exempted the grains of a person concerning whom we have a doubt, was it harvested before his conversion or after his conversion? And in that case, we saw it's a case of sofek leket, and Rabbi Meir exempted. The Rami Ahadu Kotani Sofek Leket Leket, and Reish Lakish raised that other source as a contradiction to the source that said that we are obligating it as a tithe for the poor. Vishani lay, and regarding that controversy, that contradiction, Rabbi Yochanan answered, Beloshin ben Agra Nishoino saw the source that you are teaching that contradicts, I teach that as a as a Loshen Yochid, as taught by Yehuda ben Agra, in the name of Rabbi Meir, and not a general consensus as to what Rabbi Meir says, so that it's not a contradiction, but one of the sources is represented by a private or individual opinion and not the consensus opinion. So we basically are left with a machlokes as to what Rabbi Meir actually said. The Gemara continues, but before we learn the Gemara, we glance at the outside margin to our Nosei heading, Dino Shel Rav Sheshes, the ruling of Rav Sheshes, B'mokim She'ein Aniyim, in a place that there are no poor, Balabayis Yochol Lekach Sla'atzmo Matnes Aniyim. The Balabos, the owner, can keep for himself the tithes. The Gemara, Levi Zorah B'Kishar. Kishar is the name of a place. Levi planted a field in Kishar. Velo havu aniyim lemishkal leket, and there were no poor in that area to take the leket. The leket being those grains that fall by the side when the harvesting takes place. Also lekameh d'Rav Sheshes. So Levi presented his problem to Rav Sheshes, Omar Le, and Rav Sheshes answered. The pasuk says laoni v'lagir tazov osam. These tithes are to be left to the poor and to the ger. V'loi l'orvim v'lo l'atalefim, and not to the different creatures of the fields. Orvim and atalefim, names of different creatures that occupy fields. So that if you don't have the poor to give it, it will end up in the possession of these creatures, the orvim and atalefim. Well, that's not what you're expected. That's not what's expected of us. Therefore, in the absence of the oni and the ger, so take it. At this point, we see triangles, and they're explained under our Mivneh heading in the outside margin. Kushios, they represent questions, Shemarim, that show the Im'ein Aniyim, Tzorach Latzniyom Laniyim. If you don't have the poor in your vicinity, you have to put them away and save the items for the Aniyim, which is raised as a Kasha challenge to Rav Sheshes, who indicated that if you don't have Aniyim, so take them for yourselves. Meisve, the source, says, Ein mevien truma lo migoren l'ir, velo mimidbar l'yishuv. The truma tithe, that one tithes from his grains, the owner is not expected to bring it from the granary to the city, nor from the desert to the community. In other words, the owner doesn't have to serve as a transporter of truma to where the Kohanim are located. But rather, the expectation is that the Kohanim will go to where the Truma is to collect it. V'im ein sham kohen, if there is no Kohen, then socher paro mavia, then the owner of the field, of the grains, is obligated to hire an animal of transport, a cow in this case, mipnei hefsid Kohen, in order to prevent the loss of the kahuna. The Kohanim would, if you don't have Kohanim that will go to the granary or to the desert, then the owner is obligated to see to it that it doesn't go to it doesn't get lost, doesn't go to loss. But what's more important is what we see in the Rashi, v'im ein shom Kohen, almo boy lafrusho latznua aj demishkach Kohen. There's an obligation to tithe it and to set it aside until he finds a Kohen. Hochinami boy latznua ad mishkach aniyim. So too, we are deriving from this source that in the case of the matnas aniyim, the grains in the field, you don't take it for yourself, but you have to set it aside and wait till you find aniyim. The Gemara says, and answers, shiny truma. Truma is different. The tavla, it creates, if it's not tithed in the first place, it creates a status of tevel velo sagi de lo mafrishla. The nature of truma is such that you have to tithe it, otherwise you won't be able to benefit from any of your grains. All of your grains will be forbidden until you do the act of tithing. So since in the case of truma, the tithing process starts, you're expected to go all the way. this is not the case with regard to leket. The fact that you have leket in your field doesn't prevent you from benefiting from the rest of the grains. So as a result of this fundamental difference, truma creating a tevel status, truma we mean the lack of tithing of it, creating a tevel status, as opposed to the leket, lacking the lack of giving of the leket does not create a tevel status, so we do not compare them. Question, Vare matanos de lo tavli, when it comes to the matnas kahuna, zorachai v'keva, they don't create tevel, in other words, an animal from which these tithes have not been separated doesn't restrict one from eating the rest of the meat. Vitanya, and yet it says regarding matanas, we have a source, and the point of this source will be that if you don't have a kohen, you are nevertheless expected to make a provision to benefit the kohen. So you see that even in a non-tevel situation, you don't take it for yourself, but you have to make a provision for the ultimate receiver. That will reinstate our question, where Rav Sheshes didn't seem to learn along these lines. He indicated that, well, if you don't have the oni that's there, so take it for yourself. Let's see the source. Vitanya. Mokon shenagu limloig ba'agolim lo yavshit es hazroa. In a place that it's the custom was limloig, Rashi explains that the meat would be prepared with it, with the skin on it, and they would eat it with the skin. So if that was the case, if that was the custom of the area, when it comes to the zroa, the arm of the behemoth that was given to the kohen, you are to give it to the kohen with its skin on it, because that's the custom of the place. Lehashit es harosh, if the custom in a particular place was for people to skin the heads of animals, then lo yavshit es halechi, the lechi which is part of the animal's head, the jaw, you shall make sure the kohen gets it with its skin on it. Don't skin it. Lo yavshit is to remove the skin. V'im ein shom kohen, if there is no kohen in the area to whom the matanis would be given, malin oison bedomim, you then make an evaluation of how much they are worth, and the money is set aside for ochlon, and well, then eat the meat at the same time preserving the value in the form of cash. And why do we say this? They have said coin, because we're concerned about the loss of the kahuna. So even if there's no coin around in the vicinity, that doesn't mean that you just help yourself to it, but you set aside money, and that's kept in savings for the eventual appearance of a kohen. Well, you see that we treat this differently than the way Rav Sheshes ruled with regard to the leket in the case there were no aniyim. The Gemara, by the way, just as far as markings are concerned, notice what we've done from the third line of the Gemara. From the top, we dashed under the line v'lohavu aniyim, and then a few lines after that, we had dashed under the line in the source dealing with the truma v'im ein shom kohen. And likewise here in this source, we dashed the line of v'im ein shom kohen. In each case, we are trying to emphasize the common element in under discussion, namely the ultimate receiver is not in the vicinity. Anyway, the Gemara, after raising the issue concerning matonas, where we see that even though they don't create tevel, they still are, we still make provisions for them. The Gemara answers, "Shaini matonas kahuna, dinesino ksiva bay." The case of matnas kuna is different than the case of leket. In the case of matnas kuna, the Torah says, "Venosan lekoin." The word v'nosan indicates it's upon you to see to it that it's given to the Kohen. The word nosan does not appear in the case of the leket. Therefore, this obligation doesn't exist. Hashto de'osis lahachi, now that we've come to this point,
Truma Nami, with regard to the question that was raised from Truma, we can answer it without using the Tevel explanation. We can use this explanation and say, Truma Nami Nisina Ksiva Bei. The term Nisina appears with regard to Truma, and therefore there is this obligation to see to it that he is given the Truma. Like we just said, he is given the Matnas Kuna. But Nisina does not appear in the context of Leket. Hence, this need to provide or to make this provision for the Oni doesn't apply. The Gemara asks, V'yala ta'azoiv yaseira lomali. The expression ta'azov appears a couple of times in the case of the Matnas Aniyim. We have the psukim that are relevant to this, found at the bottom of your Gemara page. Under the Rashi commentary, we have written the psukim. The word tazov means you shall leave it for them. The extra expression, leave it, and again leave it, the feeling of the Gemara in asking this question, Rashi explains, is it not coming to tell us that if you don't have an oni in the area, you still must make a provision for him to get it? Is it not there for that purpose? So the Gemara answers, no, it's not there for that purpose. And again, if it was there for that purpose, it would have been a challenge to Rav Sheshes. Hence, this is featured with a triangle. The Gemara answers, it's not there. The extra Tazel Pasuk is not there for this purpose, but rather for something else. And that something else is featured in this source, Lichadisanya, the following source. It teaches, Hamafkir as Karmoi, a person who declared his vineyard as unowned, Mafkir, Hefker, Uleshachar Hishkimu Botsro, and the next morning he wakes up early and harvests it. It's basically taking it back. Chayov Beperet Ubeoilos Beshiko Vepea Upoter Min HaMaisras. This field will be obligated in these different types of, we'll call it types of tithe that are due to the aniyim. In the case of a vineyard, there are four of them. There's peret, oilos, shikopeya. However, there is an exemption from the miser oni tithe, the one-tenth of the harvest given to aniyim during the third and sixth year of the agricultural cycle. In this case, there will be an exemption. Now, why is there this difference? Why is it that there, even though a purely hefker field, if you're walking along and find a totally unowned field, so you can take whatever's there and you don't have to worry about the leket, the peret, the olos, the leket, or we'll say the peret olos shikon peah, because that's a pure hefker field. However, the case of a field that was owned and then declared unowned, and the next morning he comes and reclaims it, or goes and harvests it, he goes and harvests the field that he himself had declared unowned, because of the extra ta'azov word you find in the case of olos and peret, peon shikha, those tithes must be left. However, in the case of Meiser Oni, you do not have the extra ta'azov word, and hence, in such a case where you had declared the field unowned the day before, and then you went ahead and harvested it, you don't have to tithe the Meiser Oni tithe from that harvest. But just to repeat, as far as the peret olo shikhan peah, that you will have to leave in that case where you were mafkir kamo and the next morning you went and harvested it. Hahu sako de dinri, a sack of coins, the osa lebei midrasha, that arrived at a base medrash. Base medrash was headed by Rav Ami. Called him Rav Ami v'zocha bohen. Rav Ami went ahead and took possession of these coins that were brought to the base medrash. The Heichi Ovid Hachi, how could Rav Ami lunge forth and take the coins?
V'hoksi v'nosan. Does it not say in the pasuk regarding different donations and tithes? It says v'nosan, you shall give v'lo shito me'asmo, as we have learned in an earlier Gemara, which indicates that don't take it on your own. And here it seems that Ravami lunged forth and helped him and took it for himself. The Gemara answers, Rav Ami nami laniyim zocha bohen. Rav Ami wasn't taking it for himself. He was taking the coins that were brought to the Beis Medrash. He was taking them on behalf of others, on behalf of the poor. Viboy Seima, another explanation with regard to Rav Ami's behavior is Odom Choshuv Shaini. When you're dealing with a person of importance, for example, someone appointed to position of Rosh Yeshiva, he is able to take them for himself. Desanya, we have a Tanaic source which mentions regarding, it features a Kohen Gadol, but the Kohen Gadol is an example of a person of leadership position. It is an obligation on the community to make sure that the person in leadership has wealth, so that it was an obligation anyway on everyone around to make sure that Rav Ami, as Rosh Yeshiva, would get these coins. So he was not acting improperly by taking that which he was supposed to get as a function of this halacha featured in the Braisa that we will now learn. V'akoyin ha-godol me'echov. That is the pasuk. The Kohen who is the Kohen Gadol, who is greater than the others, Shie Gadol Me'achov, he is expected to be greater than the others. Benoi, Bechochmo, Beosher. Benoi would be in his appearance, in his looks, in his beauty, his wisdom, and his financial standing. Achirim Omrim, Minayin Shim Ein Lo. From where do we know that if he doesn't have, in the case of finances, we can say this, She'echov HaKohanim Meganoso, that the fellow Kohanim are expected to give to him. Talmud Lomar V'Kohen HaGadol Me'echov. The word Me'echov means Gadleu Mishel Echov. Make him great. Of course, you can do that with money. It's hard to say that you could do that with issue of wisdom and looks, but with regard to money, you can increase his possessions by giving to him. The Mishnah. Before looking at the Mishnah, we have a little title, a brief title on the side. Ezehu Hazroa Halechi. The Mishnah will be identifying where or what constitutes the arm and what constitutes the lechi, the jaw of the animal. Before learning the Mishnah, we highly recommend getting possession of a book of illustrations, which will help in appreciating what's taught here all the more. So the Mishnah says, Ezu azroa. What is the zroa? What constitutes this zroa? Answer, min haperek shel arkuva ad kaf shel yad. From the joint known as the arkuva up till the shoulder blade. Rashi explains that this involves two bones. We can call it the middle bone and the upper bone. The leg of the animal, the arm or the front leg of the animal from the shoulder blade till the floor is made of three bones. So the zroa is made of the middle and uppermost bone. For who shall nozir? In the case of a nozir, when he completes his nazirus period, he brings a korban known as the ale nozir, and there's from the ale nozir there's something called the zroa b'sheila, which is given to the kohen. The zroa of the ale nozir is also made of these bones. It means not just the bones, obviously, but it's those sections of the leg. Ukenegdo beregel shok. Chazav shok are given from a shlomim korban. The shok, the regel being the hind leg of the animal. So in addition to the chazav, the breast
of the animal given to the Kohen in a Shlomim offering, the Shok also. And as far as this mission is concerned, the Shok is made of the middle and uppermost bone of the hind leg. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shok min haperek shel arkuva ad sovoch shel regel. Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is different in that it is the shok is defined by the not two bones but one bone, the middle bone. And of course, as we said before, the middle bone is simply a reference point, but it's the meat that surrounds that section. The meat, meaning the meat and the whole, that whole section of the leg. Eizehu lechi, what constitutes lechi? Min haperek shel lechi ad piko shel gargeres. Glancing at the Rashi, haperek shel lechi, etzel hatzdoim, it's the sides of the head. We're talking about the the lower jaw of the animal. The chotech klape mata ad piko shel gargeres ad shipui kova. You are going to then cut from the, we'll say the jaw where it joins the at the side of the head where it joins the upper jaw. So you're going to cut the lower jaw at an angle downwards until you get to what's called the shipui kova, which is the upper part of the trachea. And that's known upischo shokona, beis habliots, the entrance to the trachea, and also at that point animals swallow. Dahainu luchayayim hatachtonim im haloshen. What, in effect, the Kohen will be getting is the lower jaw together with the tongue. The Gemara. Tonu Rabbonan, hazroa. The Pasuk says, hazroa, ze zro yamin. That's a reference to the right front leg. Atomer ze zro yamin, o eno elo zro smol. Do you mean right, or maybe the meaning is left? Talmud lomar, hazroa. The Pasuk uses the word, the hey, as part of the word zro, ha zro, my tamuda. How do you see that? That, how do you see in the word hazroa the concept of right, or the position of right? Answer, kida omar rova, as Rova Sel says elsewhere in the discussion concerning the gid hanoshe, Rava says ha-yerech, and the word the thigh there is spelled with a hey, ha-yerech, and Rava understands the hey means ha-miyumenes shebi-yerech, the stronger one of them, the miyumenes, the main one, and that is the right one. Hochanami hazroa hamiyuman shebezroa. So to it would, it's a reference to the right one, miyuman, like the word yamin, the right, the stronger one, the primary one. Before going further in the Gemara, we want to note some of the structural elements. We have a Mivneh heading where we feature a house marking. The house marking here doesn't appear in the Gemara text itself, but as a numbering along the right-hand side of the Gemara. These are Makoros. They represent sources, Lizroa Yamin, that the Torah, when it speaks about the Zroa, it's talking about the right-hand Zroa. The double underlining that appears will feature the words Hazroa L'chayim V'keva. The Gemara goes on. V'halochoyayim, l'may also. What about the hay in the word ha-lochoyayim? Answer, this hay, since we're talking about a jaw, it's not a function of right or left, but rather, l'hovi tsemer shebarosh kvosim v'seyer shebezakan t'yoshim. That when a sheep is slaughtered, the Kohen is to get the wool that's on the animal's head and the hair that's on a goat's head when it is the beard that grows on the face or the jaw of the goat. The word v'hakeva, the hay appears in that word as well. L'mai osa, what is the role of the hay there? L'hovi, the keva being the stomach of the animal. So l'hovi chelev sha'al gabi hakeva, the chelev that covers the keva is part of the matnas kuna, the cholav shebesoch hakeva, and the milk that's found inside when you're dealing with a suckling animal and you slaughter it, so there's milk in its stomach, that milk is congealed, and that is given along with the keva to the kohen. Omer Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, Kohanim Nagu Bo Ayin Yofev V'Nasnuhu Lebailim. Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi tells us that Kohanim were gracious with regard to this milk and gave it to the owner, left it with the owner. It should be pointed out that this chalav, this milk, this congealed milk was used for the production of cheese, because once the milk is inside the stomach of a suckling animal, there are different enzymes that are secreted by the animal's organs, and those enable cheese to curdle and harden, so that the ownership of this milk would basically guarantee you success in the cheese business. The Gemara points out, as far as Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi is concerned, Taima Dinagu, the reason the owners got is because of the graciousness of the Kohanim. Ha lo Nagu, if the Kohanim didn't follow this practice of leaving it with the owners, the day who, it would have been the Kohanim. He would have been the owner of it. Dorshe Chamuros Hoyu Omrim. We're now going to start a second approach to the issue of rightness in the context of the Zroa, and we'll also feature explanations regarding the Zroa L'chaim and Keva. Dorshe Chamuros, one of the explanations for this phrase means it's those people that explained psukim that are hard to understand. Mikros Stumos. The thrust of this Gemara is that the gift of Zroa Chaim Keva given to the kahuna was a result, if you will, of Pinchas committing his act of bravery, of salvation, when he killed the head of the tribe of Shimon. Zimri, and his intimacy with Cosby, that's featured in the Torah and Sefer Bamidbar, and thereby saving Klal Yisrael from devastation. So in exchange or in reward for his act, he merited receiving the Zroa L'chaim V'Keva. And this Gemara will show how these appendages, these organs, these limbs correspond to his act of we'll call it bravery of salvation. When, as we said, when he killed this couple during their act of intimacy. Dor shechamurus hoy omrim. Now, regarding rightness, hazroa keneged hayad, the animal's forearm is connected the arm of Pinchas. V'chein hu omer vayikach roimach biyado, and he took a spear. Now, which hand does a person use when he grabs an arm, a weapon? He uses his right arm to grab the weapon, and hence you see the relevance of rightness with regard to the zroa, which, as we said, was given to Pinchas as a reward for his act. We call this midah keneged midah. Pinchas used his right hand in grabbing the spear to kill these offenders. So, too, he received the right arm of the animal as reward. Ulechayayim keneged tefillah. The jaw, part of the mouth, is in honor of prayer, which one does with his mouth. V'chein u'omer v'yamot Pinchas v'yipalel. Pinchas, the Pasuk says, he stood in prayer. Keva, the stomach, or which is an internal organ, kemashma'a, as it implies. It's at a certain part of the anatomy of the animal, the Chenu Omer, and likewise it says with regard to the spearing of the couple, it says Ve'el Ho'isha El Kubasa. Now you see the word Kubasa is similar to the word Keva, so that the arrow in the execution of the couple, it entered the woman at that area of her anatomy, and hence the Keva is given to Pinchas and the Kahuna. V'tana Maisi Lo Mehacha. This is now a third approach to with regard to rightness and the of the forearm. The Pasuk says Shok Hayomin. This, of course, is shok is not a reference to the matnas kahuna, but it's reference to a korban. It says shok hayomin. And before we go on, we ought to note that on the side of the Gemara, we have written in a pasuk, Vayikra Perek Zayin Pasuk Lamed Beis, it says, Ve'es shok hayomin titnu truma la'kohen mizivchei shalmechem. You shall give the right shok to the kohanim as a tithe from the sacrifice of a korban shlomim, that which is separated from the korban shlomim and given to the kohen. The rest of the animal was eaten by the owner, the one who brought the korban. But the shok hayomin was given to the kohen. Now it says the shok, which is we mentioned earlier, is the hind, the part of the hind leg, the right hind leg. The ain li ela shok hayomin. From this I see the shok zroa mukdashim minayim, the arm of korbanos, and this is relevant to the case of the ael nozir, which we mentioned before. This is the korban shlomim that a nozir brings upon the completion of his nazirus. That's a zro, it's a forearm of mukdashim, of something sanctified, of a sacrifice. That, once again, is the ael nozir, the sacrifice the nozir brings. Minayin, how do I know rightness? Talmud Lomar, truma. It says in that pasuk that we read, titnu truma. Zroa chulin minayin. How do I know rightness with regard to the zroa of the matnas kuna, which is our topic? Talmud Lomar titnu. In that same pasuk, which already featured yamin in the context of the shok, you find the word titnu also. So titnu covers our case of the matnas kuna, the zroa, right zroa of matnas kuna. Truma covers the case of the right zroa in the case of the zroa of b'sheila of the ael nozir. Eizehu lechi min haperek shel lechi ad piko shel gageres. This is a quote from our Mishnah. The Gemara asks v'hotanya, but do we not have a source that says note la ubeis shchita ima, that the kohen receives the lechi and the beis hashchita is the part of the neck where shchita is done. Now that implies something more than the what the Mishnah said, the pikos shel gargeres. Because generally speaking, the knife in shchita is inserted at a point lower on the neck, lower along the neck, than the pikos shel gargeres. Lo kashya. There is no contradiction. Now this is the first of a couple of approaches. It says that in general, the location is ad piko shel gargeres, according to both sources. Ha rabbanan v'ha Rabbi Chanina ben Antignus. The source that says beis hashchita, according to Rabbi Chanina ben Antignus, the point of shchita could take place very high up on the neck, very close to the entrance to the trachea. That is the base apika. So that the source, the braisa, that says that the kohen gets the lechi and the base hashchita, the base hashchita, according to Rabbi Chanina ben Antignus, is the pika shel gargeres. The Mishnah that doesn't call pika shel gargeres base hashchita, just refers to it as pika shel gargeres. It's the same location. However, according to the Rabbanan, that pikos shel gargeres cannot be described as beis hashchita, because as far as the Rabbanan are concerned, that's too high up to perform shchita. So according to the first approach, both the Braisa and the Mishnah, when it describes the location of the of the Lechi, they are describing the same location. The only issue is, can you call that location by the term Beis Hashchita as well? So to that we say, only according to Rav Chinah ben Atinas can we call that Beis Hashchita, not according to the Rabbanan. Desanya, and we have a brisa that points this out. Mugremes Psula. Mugremes is a phenomenon of while cutting in Shchita, while doing the cutting, the knife veers too high up on the neck. So Mugremes, when the knife is going above the acceptable point, it's called Psula. Heyed Rabbi Chanina ben Atignas al Mugremes Shikshera. Rabbi Chanina ben Atignas says that even if the knife is cutting at a high point, high up on the trachea, when we say high, we mean closer to the head of the animal, that it's acceptable. What we see from this source is that Rabbi Chanina ben Atignas allows Shechita to take place rather high up on the trachea, very close to the entrance to that particular tube. Iboy Seima, another approach with regard to the sources that we raised as problematic. Ha v'ha Rabbanon, both sources are referring to the Rabbanon. Umay ima, when the source, we saw a source that said Beis Hashchita ima, ima means ima de behema, means it stays with the behema. Let us go over this last answer. Both sources are according to the Rabbanon. There's no argument. The Kohen receives the jaw until the Beis Hapika. However, the point below that, which is accurately described as Beis Hashchita, that does not go to the Kohen. It's ima, means it's with the behema, which stays with the owner. And hence, the two sources are according to Rabbanan, and there is no disagreement. With that, we not only conclude the perek, but we conclude our shiur for today.